Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. More Americans are taking interest in natural food and the type of foods we eat, with an emphasis on organic and locally produced food. And there are certainly benefits to eating and knowing more about fresh fruits and vegetables. But are we getting the nutrients we think we are? Well, many times we're not, says our guest today, through a combination of how we prepare it and the varietals we eat. For over 5,000 years, man has been cultivating plants, and most of that cultivation has been directed towards greater abundance and better taste at the expense of nutrients. Joe Robinson is an investigative journalist and a demonstration gardener who encourages us to eat on the wild side, as she puts it. Her book is a nutritional history of fruits and vegetables titled Eating on the Wild Side, The Missing Link to Optimal Health. From her, we learn that a backyard dandelion has far more complex nutrients that benefit humans than, say, spinach. But you don't have to comb the backyard just yet. Robinson gives you a list of the most nutritious varietals for nearly every fruit and vegetable, as well as tips for preparing them in a way that preserve the important nutrients that benefit us. Again, the name of the book is Eating on the Wild Side, and Joe Robinson is our guest today. Joe Robinson, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Well, it's my pleasure.
The interesting thing about eating on the wild side is when we think of the loss of nutrients in fresh food, we think of this as something that's happened in the last 50 to 100 years, the industrialized agriculture of the past century. You write that actually we've been evolving the nutrients out of fresh fruits and vegetables for 5 to 10,000 years, ever since we quit being hunter-gatherers. Why has this happened?
Yeah, in fact, the most dramatic loss in nutrients in our fruits and vegetables did happen when we planted the first seeds. Here's how it went. Up until that time, all human beings lived on wild game and wild plants, did well, you know, had been around for a very long time. And at some point, we looked at each other and said, you know, hey, we can do better than this. We don't have to eat these scrawny roots and these bitter fruits and this very sour or astringent wild grains. Let's take the very best of what we have, what we like the best to eat, sweetest, you know, least fibrous, most starch, and let's take it and put it and make a garden. We invented gardening so that what we really love to eat is right by our dwellings. And at that point, we left behind the bulk of the nutrients in the forest and on the plains.
And our body has evolved to crave the sweet,
yes,
the starchy, and the sugary,
yes,
because, you know, those are the things that really help us when we're down on our luck. And as far as our nutrients, those are quick nutrients to get us moving. And so we crave those because our bodies, because they're not in abundance in the wild.
That's the point right there. I mean, think about the last time you were in a national forest or park. There's very little that's sweet, starchy, or fat there. And we needed those calories in order to survive, absolutely needed them. So our brains, and to this day, when we eat sweet, you know, fat and starch, our brain releases this feel-good hormone called dopamine, which gives us pleasure. To this day, even though we're absolutely, you know, we're eating our weight in sugar a year and we're, everything we eat is dripping with fat, nonetheless, our brains continue to reward us with feel-good chemicals when we eat those foods because we haven't changed. But what we have done is dramatically change our food environment.
Now, one of the things when I first picked up the book, I was afraid you're going to say, okay, we need to go out in the backyard, harvest dandelions, bitter dandelion greens, and eat those. In fact, one of the interesting things about this book is there are very sweet and nutritious foods still out there. It's just a matter of picking the right varieties and making some very simple choices in how you pick your food and where you purchase the food and the varieties that you purchase.
I like to emphasize that last point. People haven't known until very recently that there's a tremendous difference in the food value that you get from different varieties. Think about the apples in the store. If you had, say, a Golden Delicious, the most popular apple in this country and now the world, you would have to eat three of them to get what you would get from a Jonathan or a Granny Smith. People don't know that yet, and it's so simple. And actually, Honeycrisp, which is a very favorite apple now for a lot of people, is also a good choice.
Looking at the apples, and Fuji and Honeycrisp are probably the best sweet apples, where like a Granny Smith is a little on the tart side, and it's
right,
not one you would normally just bite into.
Well,
you
a
use
lot
it for
of people
baking
do, and actually like tart, but not the majority of people. About 25% of the people in this country really like that bitter tart mixed with sugar blend. But there's people who don't want to have any bitterness. Problem with that is these nutrients that plants produce that are turning out to be highly protective for our health, many of them are somewhat bitter or astringent or sour. And along with choosing sweet food for 400 generations, we've also gotten rid of sour, bitter, and astringent flavors. So we've added this stuff that gives us high blood sugar, and we've taken away the things that we now know reduce the risk of heart attack and stroke and cancer and diabetes and obesity, inflammation. All of those things, those compounds in plants, which are like the medicine in our food, a lot of them have a slightly, you know, a flavor that some people don't like.
Now, give us a sense of the nutrients we're missing or are not as pronounced in today's fresh food. And we're talking fruits and vegetables here.
Yeah. One of the compounds that plants produce is called anthocyanins. Those particular compounds have shown the greatest health benefits so far. And this is in human studies, not animal studies or test tube studies. You know, so these anthocyanins have, like the older people who are showing the first signs of dementia, eating these foods that have those in them have not only slowed the decline of memory and cognition loss, but have helped older people have better memories and increase their cognition. And what's so important about that is that the best medicines we have for people who have those conditions don't improve things at all, but they slow the decline and they have side effects. So anthocyanins, big word, but what you need to remember is choose food that is purple, blue, black, or red. It's that part of the rainbow that has that foods are rich in anthocyanins, and berries of all kinds, except for yellow berries, are rich in anthocyanins and really important in preventing disease and helping us function and live longer better.
And that rule of the darker the food, the darker the color, the better, seems to flow through a lot of different things, from lettuce to berries to things like grapefruit. A white grapefruit has less nutrients than a yellow one
or a red one. And a red one, and red ones have much more than white ones. In fact, the red ones, if you've got, you know, predisposed to heart disease, it's going to lower a bad blood fat called triglycerides and VLDL, the worst kind of cholesterol, but the blonde or white one doesn't. So it's a simple choice. They're in your supermarket. They're going to cost the same amount. The red ones are actually sweeter. So pick that red grapefruit instead of the white one, and you'll reduce your risk of heart disease.
You refer to most of these as phytonutrients. Is that correct? Phytonutrients? Is that?
Yeah, that's a term I use. What scientists would say are polyphenols or phenols, which is why I don't use those words. Phyto means plant.
Right.
And so a phytonutrient is a nutrient produced by plants. So I like that term.
Now, some of the things you write about seem a bit counterintuitive. For example, I would think that a raw vegetable would have more nutrients than a cooked vegetable. And cooking often brings more nutrients into the food than raw foods. I thought
what it does is a lot of these phytonutrients are tightly bound to the membranes, the cell walls of a plant. And even though we chew them when they're raw and swallow them, we haven't released the bulk of those really important nutrients. Take a carrot and you cook it, you're going to have twice as much phytonutrients as if you had eaten it raw. But then also tomatoes, the longer you cook them, the better they are for you.
Interesting. Really interesting. And tomatoes is one of those ones that we've really hybridized and messed with the genetics of it, and it's not nearly the food it was at one point as far as the nutrients go.
Yeah, but here's the secret. The cherry tomatoes and grape tomatoes that you see in the supermarket are about 10 times better for you than the big ones. We created those big ones over time. Wild tomatoes are small, and so the tomatoes that continue to be small today have up to 10 times more of this compound called lycopene. A lot of people are taking lycopene supplements than the big ones. And lycopene reduces your risk of heart attack and stroke. So again, this is an easy thing you can do in the grocery store. Whenever possible, get the really small tomatoes.
It's funny. I have to tell you this story. A few years ago, we had a big beefsteak tomato plant. We got a few tomatoes, but then we went on vacation, and the varmints got in there. And so apparently some of the seeds went down where we were. And the next year, we didn't plant the tomatoes there, but we had seeds from the previous year's plant come up. Now, instead of making big beefsteak tomatoes, they made very smaller than cherry tomatoes.
But oh, that's interesting.
They turned bright red.
It was probably a hybrid variety.
Yeah, it was a hybrid, and it turned bright red, and it was like you could pop them in your mouth like a piece of candy.
Yes.
And it was the most intense flavor.
Yeah,
I mean,
well,
it was like
I've
it was like
that.
It's like a bright red beefsteak tomato, like the ones that are just vine ripened to perfect ripeness. And it was, as I was reading the book, I was saying, I wonder if that had more nutrients.
It did, and also those smaller tomatoes, just as you found, are sweeter than the big ones and have a more intense flavor. So everything is a plus, and they have more lycopene, which reduces your risk of disease.
My guest today is Joe Robinson, an investigative journalist and a demonstration gardener whose new book, which came out last year, it's now out in softcover, Eating on the Wild Side, The Missing Link to Optimal Health, was a New York Times bestseller. And she joins us today to talk about some of the different foods and the best ways to get them. Because one of the things, that getting back to that counterintuitive, we always think that, well, a fresh, something in the grocery store that is fresh, it's been picked fresh and it's there, is always going to have more nutrients than frozen foods. In fact, you say, you know, oftentimes the frozen foods will be more nutritious than your traditional early picked fresh produce that's shipped halfway across the country or maybe halfway around the world. That was surprising to me.
Yeah, it can be the case. It's not always the case. Some frozen food is not as good for you as what's in the grocery store, but I think we need to rethink the idea of fresh. So you think, oh, okay, I'm going to go into the fresh fruit and vegetable section. But a lot of our fruits and vegetables are grown in just a couple of locations around our country, like Florida and Texas and California. And they've been chosen to have a long shelf life, just sit around and still look good enough to eat. But while they're sitting around, they're burning up those phytonutrients that we want to have, you know, that are good for us, and they're also burning up their natural sugars. So the store says that they're fresh and they look fresh, but, you know, a prime example is broccoli, which we know is one of the most healthful foods we can eat. But in about a week after broccoli has been harvested, it can no longer fight cancer, which is one of the main health benefits of broccoli. And most of the broccoli that you're going to buy in the store is at least a week old.
And that's the other thing that we have to always remember. A lot of times in grocery stores, the produce is picked early. It's not at its full ripeness.
Right.
Does that make a big difference in the nutrition of the, especially these phytonutrients?
Yes, nutrition and flavor. Phytonutrients tend to peak when something is ripe. So what we do now, like with tomatoes, and this way they don't taste any good anymore, is that we harvest them when they're called three-quarters ripe, because they're firmer, and they can be, you know, they can store better, they can be packed in crates better, and, you know, they're not likely to be damaged. And then we ripen them in this warehouse with ethylene gas. We just kind of gas them. And that turns the color a really nice orange everywhere, not that beautiful color. But it doesn't increase that important phytonutrient called lycopene. So it's, you know, it's really a sham. It looks ripe, but it doesn't taste ripe, and it doesn't have the health benefits of a ripe tomato.
And actually, ethylene gas is the material given off by fruits and vegetables that actually cause them to rot in the refrigerator. Or say you have your tomatoes on the shelf, or your tomatoes and bananas together. All of a sudden, they're turning bad really quickly. That's because of ethylene gas, isn't it?
Well, yes, but ethylene gas is also essential because it ripens things. So in nature, the plant begins to produce more of its own ethylene, and it will become ripe and soft and, you know, fully mature. But what happens when you pick them before they're ripe, you take them off that plant, and then blast them with this gas in this warehouse, that natural ripening process and maturing process, which increases antioxidants, doesn't happen. So, I mean, this is what we've done over and over and over again. will interrupt the natural process and say, okay, we're smart, we're clever. Let's just make our own ethylene gas over here and give it, you know, give a blast of it so they ripen in 2 or 3 days, and then it looks like a ripe tomato.
But you just have to bite into it to know the difference.
Yeah, right. If you grow your own or you get one at a farmer's market, that's truly vine-ripened.
Yeah.
And as most people know who've had, you know, those really, you know, fully ripened fresh tomatoes, they taste like tomatoes. They're great.
Yeah, I was surprised to know that in certain, like, processed tomato, canned tomatoes and things, they'll actually add natural tomato flavor.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, let's talk about some of the foods that you go through the whole systems of vegetables and fruits in the course of the book. But let's start with lettuces. And again, you earlier talked about the darker the color, the better. With lettuce, that is definitely the idea. And you had some really interesting tips to help make lettuce more nutritious and to keep longer.
Okay, I'm going to back up just one step, which is I want to talk about wild greens versus the ones that we have today.
Mm-hmm.
Let's look at, you know, everybody knows dandelions, the wild green. Well, let's compare it to spinach, which we consider a superfood, right? Mm-hmm. Well, these dandelions have twice as much calcium, 3 times as much vitamin E, 5 times more vitamin K, and 8 times more phytonutrients. So when we walk away from wild plants, we left behind vast amounts of health-enhancing nutrients. Okay, so what do you do now that you're in the store? You're not going to find the wild greens there, but what you can do is you can select the most nutritious lettuces on display, and they're almost always the red leafy lettuces. That red color is a sign of anthocyanins, which I talked about earlier, purple, red, blue, and black,
mm-hmm.
and it's going to be much more beneficial for you than iceberg, which has hardly any nutrients at all. It's a watery crunch, which a lot of people like. But don't think of it as having food value.
So the red leaf lettuces are better than even, say, a green leaf head of lettuce or romaine?
Oh, yes, it is.
Mm-hmm.
So it goes like this. Red leafy is your top choice. Dark green leafy is your second choice. And then you're getting down into romaine. And finally, the head lettuces, which are mostly white inside, they're the least nutritious. And what's our most popular lettuce? Today.
Iceberg lettuce.
It's the iceberg lettuce.
Yeah.
In fact, half the people in this country have never tasted any lettuce but iceberg lettuce.
Wow.
So consistently, what is most popular in this country is the least nutritious variety of all.
Now, once you have your lettuce, you say take 10 minutes, say a head of red leaf lettuce or romaine for that matter. What you do is you actually separate it from the head.
Yes.
And you want to use it within a day or two, too. And you also tear it into little bite-sized pieces because actually tearing the lettuce actually increases the nutrients.
It does. Plants produce these phytonutrients for their own benefit. It wards away predators and diseases. So they're not making it for us. And one of the main things they have to do is plants have to keep from being eaten in order to have seeds and reproduce themselves. So they can produce phytonutrients that will keep away animals that want to browse on them or insects that want to eat them. And so when we take this head of lettuce and we rip it ourselves into pieces, lettuce is still alive. It's not yet dead, and it's still reacting to environmental threats. So it thinks we're this huge moose eating on it, and it's going to be creating these phytonutrients so that the next time this moose comes along, it's not going to want to eat that lettuce. So tearing it and then leaving it overnight in the refrigerator, you get 4 times more antioxidants than you would if you didn't tear it.
Wow, that's really amazing. That's really incredible.
Yeah, you're making your own phytonutrients. I love it.
Now, garlic is another one of those foods that are considered somewhat of a superfood, and we've heard all about the health benefits of it. But you had some really interesting observations on how to get the most out of garlic. You refer to it as a 10-minute rule before heating garlic.
Yeah.
You basically, whether you press it or you slice it or chop it or whatever,
right,
leave it for 10 minutes before you heat it.
I want to add in this notion that we've only known about the many phytonutrients and the health benefits really in the 21st century. Mm-hmm. It's amazing. It took us, 400 generations to find out what we'd been breeding out of the food. And so we didn't know until 2004. Some scientists, took some fresh garlic and chopped it up and then just put it in hot oil or a hot stew, hot soup. And they found that the allicin, which is the medicine in garlic, the part that fights cancer and heart disease, is not produced if you take that garlic and put it immediately into hot, anything that's hot. But they also found that if they take that garlic, chop it, press it, slice it, set it aside for 10 minutes, then the maximum amount of allicin is produced, all of those chemicals which are so good for us, and then you can put it into anything hot and you don't destroy the health benefits. So that's my 10-minute rule. I call it press and then rest. It just takes 10 minutes, and at that point, you've got all the garlic has to offer.
Onions are, that's garlic as a part of the onion family, and you found that the more pungent the onion, the better.
Yes. In fact, we clever humans, invented super sweet onions in the beginning of the 20th century. And the end of the 19th century. Onions are not sweet in nature. And try to find some.
Yeah.
They're very pungent. But, this one guy got a slightly sweet onion from somewhere in Europe, and, he spent his life breeding it to make it bigger and watery and sweeter. And that was the Walla Walla sweet, which is developed here in Washington State. But then all around the world, then you start having the Texas sweet and the Vidalia sweet. But the bigger and sweeter and the more watery an onion is, the fewer phytonutrients and the fewer health benefits it has for us. And I'm talking on the order of tenfold.
Mm.
So if you choose those hotter onions and not those sweet watering ones, you're going to have the benefits that onions used to have and are supposed to have.
And green onions surprisingly have more nutrients. They're close. I suppose they're the closest to wild onions.
You got it. Those foods that we still have that look like the wild plants themselves often have nutrients similar to wild plants. It's when you see ones that are just greatly different from what's in the wilderness and in the wild, then you begin to suspect there's probably something been bred out of this.
Now, let's talk about two staple vegetables, if you will, or starches, and that's corn and potatoes. These have probably been some of the most modified foods over generations, and you can come around, especially corn, when you think about corn.
Right.
And corn can actually be detrimental to you because it's in some super varieties now, and it's so sweet.
Right.
What are some of the things to keep in mind about corn and potatoes?
Well, when we first came to this country, and corn is totally, it only was developed in, first of all, Mexico and South America, and eventually worked up here. But the corn that was here when the first pilgrims came was not yellow or white. It was red, purple, black, and blue. Now, those are the colors of anthocyanins, which are one of the most potent phytonutrients that we can have for our health. So, like the very first pilgrims would write home about this novel vegetable, and they said it had the coat of many colors, and they described all the great colors. Well, it wasn't long. In fact, it was the late 1700s, early 1800s, that we found a very sweet yellow corn that actually one Indian tribe was growing, and all, immediately, that was the only corn that was grown up and down the coast. It was this sweeter, milder and paler looking corn, but it was only 6% sugar, but that was still very sweet to people, and they really loved it. But the corn now in our supermarkets is up to 40 and 50% sugar.
Wow.
And the most popular corn is white super sweet right now, or a pale yellow super sweet. Virtually no anthocyanins and so much sugar, it will raise our blood sugar as much as eating two cake donuts. A perfect example of how we've let our taste buds and our craving for sweet and starch redefine the food that we eat.
That section was very interesting. Potatoes is another one where, the potatoes have been bred now. They can also do a lot of glycemic problems, have interesting glycemic problems. But one thing you suggested is new potatoes are better. Eat the skin because that's where most of the nutrients are. And also, if you are having a potato, cook it, then chill it for 24 hours, and all of a sudden that brings a lot of the glycemic values down.
Yes, what happens is, and this, you know, some chemist somewhere in some lab did this experiment, which is very beneficial because so many of us are fighting obesity or diabetes and really shouldn't be eating these white potatoes, which, of course, are our most popular kind. But if you cook the potato today and then put it in the refrigerator overnight, the rapidly digested starch, which is there when you first cook it, turns into a kind of starch that's slowly digested, and therefore those sugars are released into the bloodstream much more slowly, and you don't get that blood sugar spike.
Interesting.
It's a really handy habit if you, you know, like make that potato salad today, refrigerate it overnight, cook those baked potatoes today, warm them up tomorrow, and even though you're going to heat them again, it still remains this more slowly digested starch.
Interesting. Twice baked potatoes better than once.
Yes.
Well, we're about out of time, and we haven't got to hardly any fruits, but I do want to mention one thing that looking at the section on berries, it doesn't matter about berries. If it has berry at the end of its name, it's probably good for you, and you should probably be eating more of it.
Absolutely. That's the one thing that I would say. If people only want to take on one message, it's eat more berries. Hunter-gatherers, before we had gardens, we ate tremendous amounts of berries. Right now, the USDA tells us each adult is eating, on average, 2 tablespoons of berries a week, and that includes Pop-Tarts. So, eat more berries. They're rich in anthocyanins. They're a really perfect food.
Stone fruits, very quickly. I love Bing cherries, and I was afraid I was going to get some bad news. Actually, Bing cherries are not bad.
No, they're not. Again, it's that color. It's, mm-hmm. It's that dark red color, sign of its high anthocyanin content. Here's a trick. The fresher these cherries are, the more health benefits you get from them. How do you know a fresh cherry? Well, they can be 3 weeks old and still look just fine, but look at the stems, not the cherry. The stems are going to tell you how old those cherries are. A very freshly picked cherry has bright green, flexible stem. Most of the ones you see in the supermarket have withered, graying, or brown stems. I wouldn't eat those. They're so old that they just don't have those health benefits. Mm.
Peaches are coming into season right around here in Oklahoma right now, and I was just very quickly, the darker the peach, the better. Again, getting back to color.
Ah, but there's nothing simple in nature, and there's a wonderful exception to this darker is better rule.
Mm-hmm.
Shocking to people. But a white-fleshed peach has more antioxidants than a yellow-fleshed peach.
Okay.
And it's also sweeter. So every now and then there's something which is sweeter, which is better for us. So a white-fleshed peach is great for our health. And the reason is that not all of these phytonutrients have colors associated with them. Many do, but some don't. So the peach has a lot of these colorless phytonutrients in it, which make it a good choice.
All right. The name of the book is Eating on the Wild Side. Joe Robinson, thanks very much for joining us.
It's been fun.
Joe Robinson is an investigative journalist and a demonstration gardener who's authored several books on natural foods. Her latest is titled Eating on the Wild Side, The Missing Link to Optimal Health. It's published by Little Brown. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. If you miss one of our recent broadcasts, they're available online anytime at publicradiotulsa.org. You can look for Studio Tulsa, look for our most recent shows, or search our archives. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.